So thanks again for coming to Dharma Punks.
The subject for this year's talks has roughly been thoughts and mental states that cause us suffering and stress, and how to recognize those thoughts that cause us stress, those obsessive thoughts, and what to do to rid our mind of unnecessary obsessive thinking that causes us stress and suffering. So tonight, under that general topic, I'm going to be giving a talk on working with loss. Working with loss, which could be loss of a relationship, loss of a parent or a friend, loss of a friendship, loss of any traumatic loss that we've experienced. And next week I'm going to be giving a talk on the Buddha's teachings that relate to relationships. There's all these books like What the Buddha and Marriage, Buddhism and How to Pick a Mate and stuff like that. They're generally pretty terrible. And but there are some really wonderful, wonderful teachings from the Buddha's suttas that actually give us a lot of insight into this. And also a lot of monks that I've studied with have actually given a lot of really profound talks on the subject. So I'm going to be going over that next week. But this week is the topic is loss. The most important factor to focus on when living with a traumatic loss is, of course, in order to close or to get any sense of closure, we have to be able to feel the sadness of loss. We have to be able to feel the feelings of loss. And of course, if you've ever read Elizabeth Kubler-Ross's groundbreaking work on the five stages of grief, you know that most people don't go first to sadness. First, we tend to go to, what was it, denial, then anger, then I think it was bargaining, before we get to any level of feeling the true sadness, the feelings, and then we get to finally acceptance. The reason, of course, is that anger and denial are safer, less vulnerable emotional states for us. We feel when we're angry or when we're in denial, we feel like we're in control. We feel like there's something we can do about it. We feel like there's still some sense of it that we don't have to accept. So we're in this state where we think, if I can get outraged or cannot focus on it, not think about it, or get caught up in some dramatic stories about it, I won't have to feel the feelings. But the feeling state, the physical feeling state of sadness, of loss, is the necessary step in order to get any closure. And if we don't get closure, then we don't shut the door on anything. And what we wind up doing is carrying around our past with us, like baggage. For example, if we don't mourn the loss, or if we don't feel the sadness at the loss of a relationship, then those people we dated in the past, we bring them along with us on every new date we go on. We show up at the door of a new date, and we think, well, it's just me, but actually we're bringing along all those exes that we've never actually truly gotten any closure with, because when we broke up with them or they broke up with us, well, instead of feeling the feelings, we got caught up in outrage. Oh, that person was terrible. I never should have dated them. What a mistake. Somebody should have warned me. That's the last time I'll ever date a blonde, a brunette, somebody over 5'6", somebody short, somebody fat, somebody thin, somebody this, somebody that. We get caught up in all these stories and we don't feel the sadness of the loss of the relationship. So what happens is we still have that examine unwitnessed, unacknowledged sadness that keeps that person alive in the back of our thoughts. There's actually a very elegant explanation that I can give you from the neuroscience perspective about why this is. Maybe I'll give it to you a little later. But suffice to say, until we actually feel the sadness of a loss, while we simply are in the covering emotions of anger or denial, we in no way have cleared the thinking or the karma from our minds, and we will be caught in reaction to those previous relationships. For instance, I'll give you a couple of examples. There's the classic case of the young man who grows up with a very controlling, dominating mother. And because he doesn't mourn the loss of his freedom and the fact that he had a childhood that was micromanaged, he grows up and often winds up in relationships with what they call the sort of Madonna whore complex, where the wife has to be the perfect, pristine, but unsexed woman, and then he seeks his sexual pleasure on the side, where the woman is not controlling, not dominating, not, because he hasn't closed off, he hasn't mourned what's happened in his past, he gets caught up again in that cycle. Or there's the case of the young girl who grows up with an emotionally distant father who doesn't give any love or any attention. So she grows up and she dates one emotionally cold, distant man after another. She's doing that so that she can get the love and affection from these cold, distant men today that she didn't get from her dad. Well, the problem is, if this cold, distant man she's dating suddenly says, "Oh, you're wonderful, I love you, you're the one," she immediately loses interest because he no longer represents her father. He's no longer the father who didn't give her love. He's just some schmuck trying to cling to her, so she loses interest and goes after the next cold, emotionally distant man. So until we mourn, until we actually, I would say, feel the sadness for our original abandonments or the traumatic losses in our lives, like death, we really can't move on. We are trapped in the defensive reactions and the coping strategies that we've learned to deal with these original traumas. We don't put them away. We still wind up arguing with our exes, with the new people we're dating. We think with somebody new that we're dating that they're saying something that they're not because our ex said the same thing to us. We fall into expectations based on the behaviors of the people in our past. So it's very important, in order to empty our minds from the baggage of everything that's happened in our lives, especially the traumatic experiences, that we be able to feel the sadness of losing people, losing relationships, losing friendships, losing people to death, to moving away, what have you. That's the key to closure. Without sadness, there is no closure. Okay. Now, there was a great psychiatrist named D.W. Winnicott who wrote most of his books in the 50s and 60s, and one of the things he said was that when a child is growing up, when they experience something traumatic, they turn to their mother or their guardian looking for support, and if their mother or their guardian rewards them for any reaction they have, any feeling of sadness, then that child will grow up to be happy or well-adjusted. They'll have what's known as a true self because their actual felt experience is rewarded by their parents. But many of us fall into a category of what he said is a false self. Rather than be rewarded for expressing our feelings and for being in touch with our feelings, many of our parents expect us to, straighten up, keep a stiff upper lip, you know, hang in there, soldier, don't cry, blah, 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 blah. We create a false self where instead of feeling like we can experience what we're experiencing, we instead try to experience and behave and believe the things that we're rewarded for by our parents. Some parents want their kids to always be funny or charming or together or whatever. They're not rewarded for being what they really feel. They're rewarded for some external performance. And D.W. Winnicott called this the false self. And it's not only the parents. Throughout society, we're rewarded for behaving and thinking and acting in ways that are not true to our inner, real core feelings. Men who go into the military are taught to not, they're trained not to feel fear or emotions or sadness when they kill or whatever. They're taught to adapt to a personality that befits a soldier. Now, that's an extreme case, but to a certain degree, when we socialize ourselves as children with other children, and in classrooms and such, we're always learning to abandon our true feelings, our felt feelings, and instead to perform and behave and say things that will be rewarded by our peers, the people around us. We begin to believe the persona or the false story, the false self, rather than our feel comfortable in our true felt feelings. And D.W. Winnicott said, eventually what happens is whenever we're uncomfortable, whenever we feel sadness, rather than allow ourselves to feel this sadness, we go up into our heads, into this story we tell ourselves, because we feel safer in our thoughts and in our false stories than we feel in our own bodies with our own feelings. We seek refuge in this story or dramas or these narratives of our lives. We don't feel safe being in our own bodies, feeling our own feelings. So part of course, the Buddhist spiritual practice is learning to do the exact opposite than what we've trained ourselves to do for most of our lives. Rather than fall into these stories that we tell, the stories of I'm a victim, I've always been fucked by the world, how hard my life has been, whatever story we fall into when a traumatic experience occurs to us, instead of listening to the thoughts, going first into the feelings. And I'll talk about that in a second. But before I get to that, I should talk about what listening or cultivating these stories does to us. The first thing is that the more we tell these stories in our heads, the more we look, for instance, when something traumatic has happened, we try to find a little story that we can tell about it so that we think we don't have to feel it anymore. These stories, in fact, rather than bringing us any closure, all they do is they repress the feelings for a little while. And then those feelings come back again and come back again and come back again, and they come back in other situations. When, for example, we've been in a heartbreaking relationship loss and we don't allow ourselves to simply feel the sadness, we just go into endless anger about our ex. What happens is that story doesn't get rid, that story of that person was terrible, they mistreated me, blah, 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 blah. You know, that story doesn't give us any closure. It doesn't give us any ability to put aside the damage that's been done. It doesn't allow us to move on. If there's anything you really need to learn, generally at the end of a relationship, it will be pretty apparent very quickly. But generally what we tend to do is rather than simply see what our mistakes are and then feel the feelings, we tend to go into these repetitive stories of having conversations with the people that we're angry with over and over again, telling off our ex-bosses, our ex-friends, our ex-lovers, all the things that we wish we had told them when they were around us. all the things, when you said blah, 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 I should have said blah, 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 and all this anger and this retribution and all that, it does nothing. It doesn't keep us protected in the future. It doesn't give us any wisdom, and it doesn't help us move on. It also tends to create this belief in these stories that very much distort reality. We tend to tell stories of ourselves as victims, or that other people have always mistreated us, or whatever stories we tell about ourselves in our lives, or the exact opposite, that I've always been the one at fault, that I'm not skillful, that I'm not good at this, blah, blah, blah. Whatever stories we tell, we fall into the ruts, and then we begin to expect each new relationship to fall into this pattern that we've been repeated. We don't bring a sense of openness and newness anymore to relationships. We bring the story of, oh, I'm the person who's not good at relationships, or I'm the person who's not good at friendships, or I'm the person who's not good at whatever. It's really important not to feed into these stories, not to buy into them. It's very important to be able to put them aside, to put them aside. One of the most traumatic things that can happen, I was talking with a friend of mine who was trained at his job by a friend of his, and then one day his friend, out of the blue, decided that he wasn't going to talk to my friend anymore. Just no reason, just called off the friendship. Stopped talking to him, no reason given. I don't know if you've ever had a friend who, out of the blue, just dumped you. Or it could be a relationship with no reason. And in that situation, the storytelling mind goes crazy. Goes crazy. When we don't have an explanation, when we don't know why we've been dumped, when we don't know why somebody has chosen not to answer our phone calls anymore, was it me? Was it something I said? What did I do? But, oh, that person always does that to everybody. That's probably it. Oh, maybe it was... The mind looks for the explanation so that we don't have to feel the sadness. Our minds will do anything so that we don't have to feel sad when we've gone through a loss. We desperately want an explanation, a little bow to tie around it so that we don't have to feel the loss. So that we can, every time we see that or the loss comes up, we can have a little sentence. Oh, well, that person was an asshole. I'm better off without them in my life. But when we don't know why we've been dumped, the mind will obsessively fire off day in and day out trying to figure out what it is we did wrong, what it is they did wrong, what we could have said or done differently. And it can be one of the most frustrating things, simply because we don't know how to put aside the story and go to the feelings. So, in the Satipatthana, one of the Buddha's most important teachings, he said that the key to working with feelings is first practicing sampujjana, which means bare attention. Don't bring a sense of, oh, what I'm feeling is right or wrong, good or bad. First, just watch your feelings. Watch the feelings arise. Watch the feelings pass. Be able to sit with your body, and when you feel the sadness, rather than immediately jumping into the story that you've been telling in your head, the words about why it's so sad that your friend died, your mother died, your ex doesn't want to talk to you, your boss fired you. Instead of going into the stories, just feel the body's reaction to it. Feel the physical manifestations of it. We all have places in our body where we register our grief. In my case, it's in my stomach. When I'm very upset, my stomach gets extremely tight. And my shoulders by my neck tend to get very tight as well. So I become very rigid. Everybody has their own place. Some people experience their loss in a choking sensation at the base of their throat. Some people feel their chest tightening up. Some people feel all sorts of different things. They feel their minds becoming more claustrophobic. They feel a tightening in the top of their throat. Get to know where you feel your sadness and be able to simply first sit with it. If you can't get access to your sadness, the felt sensations, not the thoughts, but the feelings in the body, sit down when you're alone and simply say, how does it feel that such and such isn't here anymore? No more story than that. How does it feel? Ask yourself, how do I feel about this relationship being over? How do I feel about my friend not answering my calls? How do I feel about my mom never listening or understanding a word I say to her? Whatever. And just ask yourself how it feels and sit as patiently as you can until you start feeling the sadness well up. The more you're able to sit with the feelings and watch it arise and pass, eventually, the Buddha taught, you'll be able to relax it. You'll be able to breathe into those sensations and calm them until you'll be able to be with the feelings without them being overwhelming. At first, it's very, very challenging because the sensations in the body will be very raw. You'll feel very uncomfortable with them. But over time, the more you can feel the physical manifestations, the place in your body where you feel that sense of loss, and the feeling of the mind being unhappy, being tight, being claustrophobic, eventually you'll be able to sit with these feelings. Now, I'm going to close with just a couple of specific teachings by the Buddha on loss and how they differ from so many of the ways we generally deal with loss. The first is the famous Kisogatami Sutta, where a woman came to the Buddha with her dead child and asked for the Buddha to bring her dead child back to life. Of course, the Buddha, if you know the story, told her to bring a mustard seed from a house where there was no death, that hadn't experienced death. And he said if she could do that, she would cure the dead child. He would cure the dead child. Of course, she couldn't do that. Every household she went to get mustard seeds, somebody would have died at that house. And as she went on this errand, she saw that death was not a personal thing. Death happens to everyone. There's nothing personal about it. There's actually another story about Kisogatami, that her husband died of a snake bite, and that the Buddha had her go to the grounds where they laid the body and watch her husband's body. And of course, when she did that, she saw not only his body, but the body of thousands of other men who had died young in life. And by doing this, again, she saw that there's nothing personal about loss. That's the first thing that the Buddha always teaches. When we experience a loss, after we feel the feelings, to reflect instead on, oh, how did this happen to me? Why does it always happen to me? Why is it I always wind up with the wrong person? Instead, to reflect on that loss happens to everyone. Breakups happen to everyone. Sadness happens to everyone. Fucked up shit happens to everyone. There isn't a person in this world that has not suffered through breakups, losses, death. You know, the Buddha said the nature of life, in his First Noble Truth, is that we will get old, sick, die. We will experience loss. We will not get what we want, and we will get the things that we don't want. It's just the fact of life. We will all experience these losses. And to take it personally causes more suffering than simply to reflect that this is just what happens in life. We lose our parents. Occasionally friends get angry or take things wrong and they break up with us. Occasionally relationships don't work out. And to, instead of viewing these things like, oh, why is this happening to me, instead to reflect again, this is the nature of life. Now, in the Kosala Sutta, the Buddha says that when we experience death, rather than get caught up in all the expectations of how we're supposed to grieve in front of other people, to only do it as much as it's helpful to ourselves, to don't fall into the trap of the false self, believing that we have to grieve a certain amount in front of people to be appropriate. And I'm going to quote him. "It's not through excessive lamentation that any aim is accomplished, not even one little bit. A wise person doesn't waver from his skillful actions while grieving. When an aim is accomplished through eulogies, good sayings, donations, and customs, follow them." In other words, while it's making you feel better, do it. "But once you see that the customs are getting in the way of ending your suffering, refocus the mind on what important action should I take now." So don't get caught up in how you think you should behave. Don't get caught up in what other people tell you you should feel. Find out what it is that's going on in your body, sit with it, and only practice the customs of loss and mourning as long as they are helpful to you. The Sala Sutta, the Buddha says, don't live in shoulds because they cause needless pain. There's this tendency we have when we experience loss, when somebody dies, instead to feel the loss, to get caught up in anger. Like, the doctors should have known that my 95-year-old grandfather was having a heart attack and should have saved him. Somebody should have intervened when my grandmother who had asthma or whatever. We get caught in these shoulds so we don't have to feel the loss. No, I'm not telling you, if somebody has acted terribly wrong, by all means to, you know, take the appropriate measures. But when it comes to working with the loss, all these shoulds, I should have been there, I should have done something, I should have said something, that person should have said something, all those shoulds don't help us move or understand or feel the feelings one bit. In the Sala Sutta, the Buddha said, if by blaming yourself any use could be gained, wise people would do it as well, but they don't. It's not by self-blame that you gain any peace or awareness. The pain in you only arises more, and your body is harmed by this needless stress. The dead are not aware that you're thinking these things, nor are they protected. Such protestations are in vain. When a loved one's time has done, think, I can't bring them back. I can't bring them back. Instead of all those shoulds, I should have done this, I should have been with them more, I should have blah, 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 blah. Move to the role of acceptance. Feel the feelings. Move to the acceptance. Appreciation, a core teaching in all the Buddhas. This is my final quote from the Buddha. Throughout all of the Buddha's teachings, the Buddha said to, rather than focus on what's missing in life, the things that we're craving, all the things that we think are wrong with life, to refocus the mind on gratitude and appreciation for what we do have, for the skillful attributes we have developed. Thus so when it comes to a loss, when somebody has died. In one of the famous suttas, the Buddha's student Sariputta is asked, would he grieve openly when the Buddha, his teacher, died? And Sariputta responds, if after such a loss, I wouldn't fall into unnecessary lamentation or, you know, showy despair, I would have the thought, what a great being was here. What a great being I got to be with. What a great being is gone. How lucky we were to benefit from such a great being. So instead of greeting loss with this sense of, oh, there's something wrong, because there isn't really something wrong. Death happens in life. Death is inevitable. People die, believe me, people die all the time from getting paper cuts and then having a germ get in the paper cut. Anything at any time can cause death. It's actually
in a way, sort of wrong that we live as long as we do. Because there's so much in the body that can go wrong. So rather than greet these experiences as there being something wrong, to instead refocus the mind on appreciating all the benefits we've had from having that person in our life, from having access to such people who've been helpful to us, be grateful for the wonderful times that we were able to experience with the people who are no longer with us. So, that is my talk on living with loss. Next week is working with relationships, so I hope you got something out of it. And now's your time to ask any questions or share anything that's going on in your spiritual practice. Thanks for listening. Hi.
Hi. You alluded to a neurochemical explanation for the process of grief. Did you, you never got to it, though. Did you
talk about that? So the question is, I alluded to quite correctly that there's a neuroscience explanation as to why we have to feel the feelings in order to move on. Traumatic experiences are kept in a different memory system than our normal memory system. They're actually logged in a place in the brain called the amygdala, which is part of the limbic system. And that's a part of the brain that doesn't understand language at all. So no matter how you try to talk to the amygdala, it doesn't understand a word you say. It's largely pre-conscious, and it's generally, almost invariably, speaks to us through the body by releasing cortisol and peptides and adrenaline. It tenses up the body whenever it experiences something traumatic that reminds itself of the original trauma. So if, for example, somebody has been raped, very often in a similar consensual sexual situation, they might go into a freeze, because it's reminding the amygdala of the original traumatic rape. Now, it's not only in traumas that horrible, or like with soldiers at war who suddenly die when they hear a truck backfiring. It's not only in traumas that big that the amygdala is involved. It's also the amygdala is involved in even minor little abandonments, rejections, experiences that we consider to be dark or negative or unpleasant. The amygdala is involved. And so what happens is the amygdala will, whenever it sees something that reminds it of the original trauma, the breakup, the rejection, the mother's abandonment, the father's being cold, it will tense up the body. And what we tend to do is then push away these sensations and get lost in some thought that will distract us so we don't have to feel these stresses, these physical manifestations of the trauma, the feelings. We just don't want to feel the feelings. So what happens when we do sit instead with the feelings and watch them arise and pass is eventually they've shown that the amygdala eventually lets go, reprocesses these traumas and stops attaching itself to more and more events in life. The more you allow yourself to sit with it, you, in a sense, are retraining the amygdala to let go of this this trauma, this tendency to attach to the trauma to new events in life. So that's what happens very often in therapy. People have repressed traumatic relationships, and then in therapy, they very slowly begin to talk about it. They're re-triggering the trauma, but they're in a safe place, so they can feel the feelings without pushing them away. And as they do that, they eventually begin to heal because the amygdala no longer views it as that traumatic. They're working through it. But the core process is feeling the feelings, because that's how the amygdala lets itself be known to us. that's the only way to basically work with those traumatic experiences.
Sure. Hi, in the back.
Hi. Thanks for your talk tonight. I've been sharing for the past